Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to my podcast. It's normal here at the beginning, before I play the jingle, to tell you about Luke's English Podcast Premium, isn't it? Because this is how I pay for this whole thing. It's how I pay for my time to be able to do this. And it's how I put food on the table. I mean, you know, I get money and then I buy the food with the money and then I take it home and then I use my hands and arms to literally put the food on the table. But you know what I mean. So let me just quickly mention Luke's English Podcast Premium. That's right. It's this service that I provide to my subscribers, and it involves vocab lessons, pronunciation lessons, grammar lessons, and stuff like that from me to you. You can get the lessons through the Luke's English Podcast app or on the website. And there's a huge library of premium content now. So if you'd like me to use my teaching skills to help you improve your English and get dedicated lessons for that specific purpose, then check out Luke's English Podcast Premium. And to get all the information that you could possibly need about it, just go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. So, hello, listeners. Welcome back to the podcast. I hope you're doing well and that you're ready to learn some more English with me in this new episode. This one is called The Mountain, and I'm going to read you a short story and then use it to teach you some English. There is a video version of this available on YouTube with the text on the screen, so you can read and listen at the same time. And you can see my face while I'm recording this, if that's what you'd like to see. You can find that video on the page for this episode on my website or on my YouTube channel. That's Luke's English Podcast on YouTube. And don't forget to like and subscribe, of course. Stories are great for learning English, and I'm always searching for various stories that I could read out on the podcast. I found a few stories and texts both online and in books that I have on my bookshelves, so you can expect some more story episodes like this coming in the future as I read different things in different styles from different texts, including some well-known published work and some independently published stuff and fan fiction that is available online. Stories make ideal material for language learning. They are compelling, and often the text of the story is also available, which makes it extra useful for language learning because it works as a transcript for what you're listening to. So today I googled free short stories online, and I ended up on a website called Commaful.com, C-O-M-M-A-F-U-L, Commaful.com. This website is described as the largest library of multimedia stories online. And on Commaful, you can read and share stories written by users of the site. Fan fiction, poetry, and comics. And they have a picture book format, which means that their stories are presented in a slightly different way, which makes them a bit more pleasant to read online or on mobile devices. More pleasant than just reading text on a screen, which is never a pleasant way to read literature. So rather than presenting their texts on screen, they put each line of the story on top of an image of some kind, like a picture of a lake or a landscape or something, and you can swipe from one image to the next, reading each line of the story as you go, which is quite nice. And so when reading these stories out loud, the format encourages you to pause as you read each line, which is quite a good habit. Pausing is a good presentation skill. Pausing can be quite a good discipline to practice because it can add some space for the audience to think, and it can change the atmosphere slightly, adding extra weight to each line that you say. So pausing and taking your time can be good presentation skills to practice. And when you listen to me telling you the story, you'll notice what I'm talking about here, the pauses. So first, what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the story to you, and you can just follow along and try to understand what's going on. And then I'll read it again, and I will stop to explain some bits of English that come up. And there are various nice bits of English in here, phrasal verbs, expressions, and other nice bits of vocabulary, mainly. The story is written in American English, which is mostly the same as British English, really, but I will point out any differences and will give you the UK English equivalents. So this can be a chance to learn some British and American English differences and equivalents. I will do a vocabulary and language summary at the end too. So at the end of this, after about an hour, I'll go through the vocab again. As I said, there will be some pauses between the lines of the story because of the way the story is presented to me on the website. I don't normally pause like this when doing this podcast, but it could be useful because it might help you absorb what I'm saying. And you can also use those pauses to repeat after me if you like. And this will be easier if you can read the lines with me. And again, you can do that by watching the YouTube video or visiting the story on comiful.com. I think you'll actually find the story embedded on the page for this episode. You could repeat after me, and it'll be easier if you have the text in front of you. Or you can just try repeating without seeing the lines if you want an extra challenge. And of course, you can simply just enjoy listening to the story without worrying about repeating or anything like that. You can just sit back and enjoy the story. So the story itself is about 10 minutes long, just to let you know what to expect. The rest of the episode is me explaining and describing the language in the story. And by the way, this story was posted on comiful.com by a user called Acnea, A-K-N-I-E-R, Acnea. And I'm assuming that Acnea is the author of this, so credit goes to him or her for writing it. And yes, follow the link in the description to access the story, and you can leave comments there if you like, or just on my website as usual. That is basically it. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you enjoy the story, and I hope you enjoy learning some English from it. But now let's begin the story. This one is called The Mountain. Actually, just before we start, I would say this story actually, it's not about a mountain. It's not about mountain climbing. I think the mountain is a metaphor which comes up in the story. But just to get you thinking, think about your childhood. What kind of child were you? I mean, what was it like for your parents to bring you up? Were you a cooperative child? Did you try to do everything your parents wanted? Did you listen to them? Did you try to make them happy all the time? Were you sort of cooperative, well-behaved child? Or were you a child who probably made your parents' lives quite difficult just by doing your own thing, not always listening, and, stressing your parents out and stuff like that? Because having kids can be quite challenging, of course, because you want your children to listen to you. You want them to cooperate. It can be quite stressful, especially if there are lots of children in the family. It's a lot for the parents to manage, to keep everything under control. And I guess some kids are easy to control and other kids are less easy to control. The easy to control ones maybe are being cooperative. They're making an effort to make things easy for the parents. But anyway, I wonder what kind of child you were. Maybe a combination of the two. I'm just saying that just to make you think about this story a little bit before we start reading. Okay. Let's go. Here we go. So, The Mountain. My mother said that out of all five of her children, I was the easiest baby. I think what she meant was that I hardly cried, rarely fussed, and was generally asleep, which I guess was a good thing for her. As the fourth of five, she had a lot to deal with before she could get to me. So I made it easier for her. I kept doing it as I grew up. If one of my siblings dropped their ice cream, I'd give them mine so they'd stop making a scene. When someone had to sit in a middle seat, you can bet that's where my car seat would be strapped. In fifth grade, when Clara Gomez stole my cookie from my lunchbox, I just shrugged and ate my carrot sticks. My nickname was Montañita, Little Mountain, because I was never moved, never bothered, always calm. In seventh grade, I broke my leg. But I didn't tell anyone for 3 days. I just gritted my teeth and hopped along, until my father found me crying on the bathroom floor. He took me to the hospital and bought me a cast we couldn't afford. And when the kids at school called me a cripple, well, you can guess what I did. In high school, my little sister Sophia was getting picked on by some boys. I pretended I didn't see it happen. But that night, I switched out her too small uniform skirt for mine. She stopped getting teased. And I wore pants for the rest of the year. When my college algebra professor lost my test and made me retake it, I just nodded and did it. When I got catcalled walking across campus, I just looked down at the ground. And you? The first day you came up to me and offered to buy me coffee, I was sure you were making fun of me too. So I stayed quiet. Eventually you flashed me that blinding smile and told me, "Guess I'll take that as a yes then." I think I said about 3 words to you that first day. But I gave you my number. And answered when you called. At first, I think, you just thought I was shy. But as the months went on and things got more serious, you started to get upset when I didn't tell you things. When I got fired from my part-time job and started skipping lunch to afford my textbooks, I didn't want to tell you because I knew it would upset you. I was right, wasn't I? You were so mad when you figured it out. "Here," you yelled, shoving money at me. "Take it. I don't need it. You know I have a scholarship. You know my parents send me money. Take the goddamn money." I just stood there. I'd never had someone yell at me while doing something nice before. When you noticed how stunned I was, you softened your voice. "Please, it hurts me to see you starving yourself. Please, take the money." For the first time ever, I talked back. "Why?" You laughed at me. "Because I love you, you idiot." I took the money, but snuck most of it back into your wallet that night when you were asleep. For most of the time we dated, we never fought. Even when one of your friends tried to tell me you cheated on me. I knew you hadn't. The friend was just a jerk. When he tried to tell me, I just stared at him. Didn't cry or yell or demand proof. That freaked the friend out a bit. He kept trying to convince me, but I stayed so calm, he eventually gave up and admitted the truth. Later you told me you couldn't believe how amazing I was to trust you so much. The truth was, I had no idea if it was the truth or not. I just didn't react because I knew if I did, it wouldn't change the outcome. And I'd learned that staying calm in situations like that gave me the power. Our marriage, too, had very few fights. If you didn't take out the trash like you said you would, I did it. And when you noticed I'd done your chores, you felt so bad that you'd do some of mine to make it up. When our children misbehaved, I never raised my voice or screamed or made a scene. I just asked them what they did. And eventually, they'd cave. Our oldest told me once it'd be much less scary if I'd just shout at them like Dad did. I figured I'd stay like I was. Calm, quiet, a peacemaker, non-reactive, for the rest of my life. But you changed that. You jerk. When you died. When you died, it was like that frozen mountain of emotional outbursts inside me melted all at once. Nobody expected it when I started screaming and sobbing at the funeral. My older brother tried to take me outside, and I punched him in the jaw. I apologized later, of course. You'd hardly recognize me now, I think. It's a lot harder for me to stare blankly now and take things. Because I keep remembering you saying, "Stand up for yourself. You deserve better, mi amor." And you're not here anymore to stand up for me or our kids. I don't know how to describe it exactly. What changed the moment you left this earth? But it's like I was blue one moment and red the next. Hard as ice before I melted into a hurricane. I was a mess for a year or two, I think, before I managed to get everything under control again. But even now, I'm not like I was. I'm still calm and rational and think before I speak. But if anything or anyone threatens our children or their happiness, I know I have to be the one to protect them. And as anyone who's gone mountain climbing knows, the serene snow-covered peaks that look so tranquil from a distance are the deadliest. Okay, that's the end of the story. All right, did you like that? Let me go back to the very beginning of this story now, and I'm going to try and sort of break it all down. Okay, so the mountain. Right, did you get the idea? Basically, it's about a person. I feel like the narrator is female. I feel like it's a woman. Could be a man, I suppose. But for some reason, something is telling me it's a woman. I don't know. I don't know why that is. It could be a man, like I said. But anyway, let's say she. And so she grew up as a child to be very well behaved, to be very cooperative, to help her mum, I think. And she had other brothers and sisters who probably took her mum's attention. Her mum was very busy looking after these other kids. And so our narrator decided that she would be helpful and that she would not make a fuss, not make any trouble, not cause any problems, keep herself quiet, keep her emotions under control. And that's how she grew up and that's how she continued to live. and she met this person, I'm assuming it's a guy, and he somehow managed to kind of open her up, or that they've loved each other. She continued to be under control all the way through their marriage. It sounds like a generally a happy, successful life. But then when her husband dies, she loses control. And even though throughout her entire life she's had this emotional reserve or a sort of control over her emotions, losing her husband meant that she lost that. And what was held inside came exploding out. And it manifested itself as unexpected behavior, like she got very emotional and screamed and cried during the funeral, punched her brother, and her life kind of fell apart. But then remembering things that her husband had said allowed her to get back to her original kind of controlled, emotionally stable state. But at the same time, she was still able to access her strong emotions and feelings. Okay. It's not really a kind of a narrative, but more just an emotional narrative, I think. Interesting story. Obviously, curious to know what you think of it. You can leave your comments in the comments section. Now, let's go through the story line by line to kind of look at the language a little bit. And I think this is American English. There are a couple of moments where you can tell it's American English. So I speak British English, so I will be pointing out any differences. For the most part, American English and British English are, you know, the vast majority of the two versions of the language, it's the same, pretty much. A few little differences, which I'll point out. Okay, all right, so here we go, the mountain then. My mother said that out of all five of her children, she had five children, out of all five of them, I was the easiest baby. Okay, fine. I think what she meant was that I hardly cried. This is interesting to note. I hardly cried. Now, to cry hard and to hardly cry. To work hard and to hardly work. Hardly, as an adverb, before a verb, is a minimizing adverb. It doesn't mean to do it strongly. It's quite the opposite. So hard, we know, like hard to, to fall hard, to do something hard. Hard can mean tough or strong or difficult. To run hard, to work hard. Yeah, work hard is like to work very seriously. But to hardly work, so hardly means almost none. Okay, hardly means almost none. So hardly work, you know, you've hardly done any work today means you've done almost no work. Okay, whereas you've worked very hard today means you've done a lot of work. Similarly, what she meant was I hardly cried means I almost never cried. Doesn't mean I cried hard, which would be like crying really hard, loudly, but I hardly cried. I didn't cry very much. Mm-hmm. I rarely fussed. To fuss or to make a fuss. Fuss would be sort of problems, complaining a lot, maybe crying. Right. So if you make a fuss, like, okay, an example, I've got a daughter, she's 3 years old, and sometimes she makes a fuss. For example, if we want her to do something that she doesn't want to do, she might make a fuss. She might start crying. She might even sort of have a tantrum, roll on the floor and cry, or put her head in the pillow or something like that, or argue or get angry, making a fuss. Okay, or to fuss. So sometimes she fusses, like, for example, if it's time to go out, but she's not ready to go out because she wants to play with her toys, she will start crying or something like that. You know, three-year-old children, that's what they do. So I think she meant I hardly cried, rarely fussed, meaning I hardly ever made a fuss, and was generally asleep most of the time, which I guess was a good thing for her. I guess it's kind of American English, although lots of British people say this now. I guess, you see, I'm even saying it myself now. I suppose would be, let's say, more of a typically British thing. I suppose this was a good thing. I suppose you're right. I suppose we should do that. I guess you're right. I guess that's a good thing. I guess we should do that. So I guess, blah, 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 in American English. And I suppose, I think maybe in British English. They say, I suppose, and I think in American English too, but we are less likely to say, I guess that was a good thing. In British English, it might be something like, I suppose that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing. So I hardly ever cried. I was generally asleep, which I guess was a good thing for her. It made life easier for the mum. As the fourth of five, she had a lot to deal with before she could get to me. To deal with things. She had a lot of things to manage, lots of things to sort out before she could finally get to me. Like, you know, where it is with children. Maybe the kid needs food or a hug or a nappy change or something like that, or whatever, some problem. So the mum had like to deal with lots of things before she could get to the daughter. So I made it easier for her. Nice. I kept doing it as I grew up. So not just as a baby, but as she grew up, she kept being cooperative and thoughtful, helpful to her mum. If one of my siblings dropped their ice cream, a sibling is a brother or sister. If one of my siblings dropped their ice cream, see, there, one, there. So we use they and their, these pronouns, when you don't know if the person you're talking about is male or female. Okay, so in this case, if one of my, either if we don't know, if it's not important. So I guess this person's got brothers and sisters. And if one of them, either brother or sister, doesn't matter which, if one of them dropped their ice cream, okay, I'd give them mine so they would stop making a scene. To make a scene, to make a fuss. Okay, make a scene. It's the sort of thing that, like making a fuss, the sort of thing that would attract attention of people. If you're in the street and your child is making a scene, your child is having a tantrum and crying or something, other people are like, you know, oh dear, and he's like, oh, you know, stop making a scene. So she would give the ice cream. She'd give them her ice cream. What a good girl. When someone had to sit in a middle seat, so in a car, you know, the kids want to be on the window seats, and the middle seat probably is the least popular seat. When someone had to sit in a middle seat, you can bet that's where my car seat would be strapped. So her car seat would be strapped into the middle seat. You can bet, meaning you can be sure, basically. You can put money on it, not literally, it's just an expression, but you can bet means you can be certain, you can be sure that something is true. You can bet that's where my car seat would be strapped. In fifth grade, so here's another American thing, the years in school, they call them grades, first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, and so on. In the UK, they tend to be like first year, second year, third year, fourth year. So we call them years, and they call them grades in America. In fifth grade, when Clara Gomez, I don't know who Clara Gomez is, probably just some girl at school. When Clara Gomez stole my cookie from my lunchbox, I just shrugged and ate my carrot sticks. To shrug is just like lift your shoulders like that as if to say, well, there's nothing I could do really. Shrug or shrug your shoulders. I just shrugged and ate my carrot sticks. Again, what a good girl. She didn't make a fuss. She didn't cry. She didn't fight. My nickname was Montañita, Little Mountain. Is this Spanish? I think so. And Mi Amor is in there too, isn't it, in this story? Is that Spanish? I think so. Maybe this is like, you know, in the USA, there's, you know, large Hispanic communities. Maybe this is, maybe the people in this story are sort of like, sort of Latin American. Because I was never moved, never bothered, always calm. The Little Mountain. In seventh grade, I broke my leg. But I didn't tell anyone for 3 days. Like, what? Really? You broke your leg, you didn't tell anyone for 3 days? Oh my goodness. This is really like pushing it to the extreme. This child is incredibly stoic. I just gritted my teeth and hopped along. Really? I mean, I think there's a limit to it. You know, it's she's a very good girl. She doesn't make a fuss. But I mean, if you break your leg, I mean, you're well within your rights to say to the mum and dad, excuse me, I know my brothers and sisters want their ice cream, but I think I've got a broken leg. Can we go to the hospital? Anyway, she didn't do that. She just gritted her teeth. To grit your teeth is when you put you clench your jaw and shut your teeth and grit your teeth. So clench your teeth or put your teeth together like that. If you're experiencing a lot of pain, you would grit your teeth like that. And she hopped along. Hop is when you kind of jump on one leg. You're walking on one leg. Hop, hop, hop. Wow. Until my father found me crying on the bathroom floor. He took me to the hospital and bought me a cast we couldn't afford. A cast is a thing made of plaster. Or, you know, when someone breaks their leg or breaks their arm, you know, if someone's had an accident, they've broken a leg or an arm, they would come back, they'd come out of the hospital with a cast. It's white, it's made of plaster, I guess, or these days they may use another material, but it's hard and it covers the broken arm or leg while the arm or leg heals. It keeps the arm or leg sort of protected and motionless. A cast. Okay. He took me to the hospital and bought me a cast we couldn't afford. So even though they didn't really have the money for this cast, he bought it anyway. This is America, of course, where you have to pay for all your health care. And when the kids at school called me a cripple, so a cripple, this is an offensive word. It's not a nice word in English. If the children are calling her a cripple is someone who's got like a physical injury or maybe a physical disability that is probably permanent. Okay, so a cripple. It's really not a nice word. And so the kids were teasing her, calling her a cripple because of her broken leg. So when the kids at school called me a cripple, you can guess what I did. Well, let's guess what she did. She probably shrugged her shoulders and, you know, didn't really react, didn't make a fuss. In high school, my little sister Sophia was getting picked on by some boys. To get picked on, it's the sort of thing that happens to children. They get picked on, they get bullied, they get teased. I think tease is here in this story as well. So to get picked on. So Sophia was getting picked on. So to get picked on means when other children say mean things about you, they say nasty things to you, they make you feel bad, maybe they make fun of you. They might even physically do things like sort of maybe hit you or poke you. Okay, it's when usually older, bigger children do bad things to younger children because it makes them fit, because it's fun for them. But for the younger child, it's absolutely horrible. It's very common to get picked on at school. So when her little sister was getting picked on by some boys, I pretended I didn't see it happen. I guess this is for Sophia's sake, so Sophia doesn't feel embarrassed. But I mean, all right, anyway, she pretended she didn't see it happen. For me, if I was getting picked on, I would hope my brother saw it and so he would step in. But maybe the author, the narrator of this story, is trying to be a lot more stealthy, discreet. And that night, it says, I switched out her too small uniform skirt for mine. So clearly at this school they have a uniform, and I guess Sophia was getting picked on because her skirt was too small. And so the narrator switched out her too small uniform skirt for hers. So she swapped. So she took Sophia's uniform skirt at night when no one knew it was happening. She took Sophia's skirt, which was too small, and replaced it with hers, which was probably the right size. So Sophia would look normal. But the narrator couldn't wear her skirt. So she did it when no one was looking, which I guess is sort of super generous. She doesn't expect to receive any praise for it. She just did it secretly. So she stopped getting teased. There's that word, to be teased, to be picked on, to be bullied, or when people make fun of you. And I wore pants for the rest of the year. Here's some more American English. Pants meaning trousers. Okay, so she wore trousers. In the UK, we say trousers. In the USA, they say pants. But in the UK, our pants are what you wear under your trousers. Underwear. Okay, so you put your pants on and then you put your trousers on. Okay, in the UK. Whereas in the USA, your pants are the things you wear on the outside. Trousers, we call them. What do they call pants in America? Underpants? That's another question for another time. Oh, okay, I've got to have to Google it. What do Americans call pants? Okay, this is from Yahoo Answers, if this is a decent... underpants. I'm English and I generally call it underwear. Underwear, shorts, drawers, knickers, underwear, underpants, shorts. Okay, that'll do. All right, next. When my college algebra professor, it's in maths, algebra, lost my test and made me retake it, I just nodded and did it. So the professor actually lost her test, and because he or she lost the test, the narrator had to retake it. Now, this could be a massive problem that you could make a huge fuss about this. You can imagine getting the parents involved. You know, I can't believe that the professor lost the test, and there's no way I want my daughter to have to repeat the test again. I think she should be blah, blah, blah. You know, it could be a big problem. But she just nodded and did it. Wow. The patience and tolerance of this person is incredible. When I got catcalled walking across campus, to get catcalled, this is when, say, a girl is walking across the street or something, men shout things or whistle or something at a woman in the street. All right, darling. And probably at worse things. They say sort of sexual things and stuff like that. It's really not nice at all. It's totally horrible, I guess, for women to get catcalled. When I got catcalled walking across campus, I just looked down at the ground. So she didn't react. And you, the first day you came up to me and offered to buy me coffee, I was sure you were making fun of me too. To make fun of someone, right? She thought that he was teasing her. So I stayed quiet. I guess this is at like university age now. Eventually, you flashed me that blinding smile. Flash. So flash, you know, flash like a flash on a camera. A flash of light. And you can flash a smile as well. I can't do it very well. To flash a smile. You sort of, when someone does a very charming looking smile at you and it's like, oh, wow, your smile is so blinding. So brilliant and attractive. You flashed me that blinding smile and told me, guess I'll take that as a yes then. I think I said about three words to you that first day, but I gave you my number. What were those three words? Here is number. Here is number. this, my number. It was that the three words? You call me. I don't know what it was, but anyway. Maybe four words. Here is my number. I'm joking. I think I said about three words to you that first day, but I gave you my number and answered when you called. So, romance. At first, I think you just thought I was shy. But as the months went on and things got more serious, you started to get upset when I didn't tell you things. Upset in English. You can be upset because you're sad, or you can be upset because you're angry. But it's basically when your emotions get too much and you might cry. So if someone is upset, they might be upset because they're very sad. They might be upset because they're very angry. See, it could be either. You started to get upset when I didn't tell you things. That would be probably angry and maybe hurt. That kind of upset. But basically, emotions become too much and often involves crying or like expressions of anger or when someone's emotions get too strong, they get upset, right? You started to get upset when I didn't tell you things. When I got fired from my part-time job, so when she lost her job, and started skipping lunch. To skip lunch is when you just don't eat lunch. You have your breakfast, you have your dinner, but skip lunch. In this case, to save money, I started skipping lunch to afford my textbooks. In order to pay for her textbooks she needed for university, she stopped eating lunch to save money. I didn't want to tell you because I knew it would upset you. I was right, wasn't I? You were so mad when you figured it out. So there's some American English here. Mad, angry, we would say in the UK. But in American English, mad, yeah. For us, mad means crazy. But in American English, it means crazy too. But it also means angry. But it doesn't mean angry in British English. So anyway, you were so mad when you figured it out. Also in British English, we don't usually say to figure something out. We say to work something out. Okay, so you were so angry when you worked it out, when you managed to understand what was going on. Here, you yelled, shoving money at me. Again, in British English, we don't really yell, we shout. Okay, so yell in American English, shout probably in British English. Here, you shouted, shoving money at me. So he's kind of like giving her money like that in a fairly sort of aggressive manner, maybe, but being generous. Take it. I don't need it. You know I have a scholarship. So a scholarship is when someone's university education is paid for by someone else, probably because they're good at sport. Often in American colleges, you get a scholarship if you are really good at football or basketball or something like that. If you're really good at sport, maybe the college will pay for you to take your degree because you will be a benefit to them, because there's a whole sort of university sports scene is kind of really important, and colleges like to have really good sports teams. I guess there must be some sort of like industry of a lot of sports stars who become professional sports players, go through the college system. There must be money involved. Anyway, so some people get a scholarship. Their education is paid for by someone else, but usually by the university or by a sponsor or something. You know I have a scholarship. You know my parents send me money. Take the goddamn money. Okay. That's very American. Take the goddamn money. It sounds like from an episode of Suits. You know that American TV show? Suits. It's on Netflix, I think, or something. Yeah, Meghan Markle was in Suits. Yes, Suits. Anyway, it's about lawyers. And every other word is goddamn. I want my goddamn name on the goddamn wall. And are you out of your goddamn mind? Everyone's goddamn this and god out of their goddamn minds. And I'm, you know, goddamn. I'm wearing a goddamn suit and this. No, I don't know why everything's in goddamn black and white here. And goddamn it, Meghan. You're going to, you know, what did you goddamn well say to the goddamn queen? And so on and so forth. So very typically American stuff. Anyway, where was I? Here. Take it. You know my parents send me money. Take the goddamn money. I just stood there. I'd never had someone yell at me or shout at me while doing something nice before. I'm being really nice to you. Take this money. Thanks. When you noticed how stunned I was, if you're stunned, it's like you don't know how to react. You don't know. You sort of don't move. You can't do anything. Stunned. When you noticed how stunned I was, you softened your voice. You started speaking more softly. Please, it hurts me to see you starving yourself. Please, take the money. For the first time ever, I talked back. Now, this doesn't mean this is the first time she ever responded, that she was just mute, she never spoke before. No, to talk back. I think in British English, we'd say to answer back. And it means to kind of defend yourself. When someone is saying something against you, you kind of respond and defend yourself. That's what talk back means. It also means to just reply. But in this context, it means to sort of reply with defensiveness, or maybe to protect yourself, you know, to argue a little bit. So, you know, it hurts me to see you starving yourself. Please take the money. And then for the first time ever, I talked back. Why? Like, why does it hurt you? And you laughed at me. Because I love you, you idiot. Because I love you, you idiot. I took the money. You're damn right you took the money. You goddamn right you did. Sorry. I took the money, but snuck most of it back into your wallet that night when you were asleep. To sneak something in, to sneak. S-N-E-A-K. Sneak, snuck, snuck. Sneak. Okay, you can sneak somewhere, which means you go somewhere quietly without anybody noticing. Like a ninja. Sneak, sneak, sneak. I snuck into the kitchen in the middle of the night in order to eat something from the fridge. Okay? To sneak out of your... I snuck out of the house to go and, you know, hang out with my friends. I snuck out through the window, something like that. You can also sneak something somewhere. So in this case, she snuck the money back into the wallet. Okay? She's like ridiculously good a ridiculously good, kind person, it seems. She accepted the money, but she actually snuck most of it back into the wallet that night when you were asleep. So she took the money, but then sort of like sneakily gave it back to him. For most of the time we dated, we never fought. Fought, obviously, fight is the verb. Fight, fought, fought. For most of the time we dated, we never fought. Even when one of your friends tried to tell me you cheated on me. To cheat on someone means basically to go with another. In this case, she's with him, boyfriend, girlfriend, and she cheats on him means she sleeps with someone else or goes with someone else, another guy, right? So even when one of your friends tried to tell me you cheated on me, so they didn't even fight then. So who is this other friend? Probably some jealous person who's like, oh, they're the perfect couple. I'm going to break up their perfect couple. The dream couple. I'm going to burst their bubble and say, you know, Tony, yeah, he's been cheating on you. The guy's name's Tony, I've just decided. Yeah, you know what? I saw Tony with someone else. I think you're going to need to have a conversation with Tony. What? Anyway, he tried to tell her that Tony was cheating on her. Uh-huh. And she says, I know you hadn't. The friend was just a jerk. Another bit of American English, a jerk. It's just like a... what would be the equivalent of a jerk? Just like an idiot and not someone who's not nice and someone is stupid. It's just a twit, an idiot. I'm trying to think of words that are not really rude. I think I can think of plenty of very rude words. Twat, although I wouldn't say the word twat. In American English, twat is a lot more offensive than it is in British English. In British English, it's not that bad, really. But, yeah, so be careful with that one. He was just an idiot. Let's go for idiot. I know you hadn't cheated on me. The friend was just an idiot, a jerk. When he tried to tell me, I just stared at him like this. Oh, yeah, I think Tony's been sleeping with someone else behind your back. And she just stared at him like this. Seriously? Didn't cry or yell or demand proof. Cry, what? What are you talking? What do you mean? Didn't cry or yell again like, what? Or demand proof. How do you know? I want proof. Show me the photos. She didn't do that. That freaked the friend out a bit. He was like, don't you believe me? Huh? And the friend's like, annoyed. This friend is a jerk. he kept trying to convince me. But I stayed so calm, he eventually gave up and admitted the truth. No, he is. Look, honestly, okay, it's not true. That's maybe what happened. Later, you told me you couldn't believe how amazing I was to trust you so much. Oh, it's sweet. What a sweet story. The truth was, I had no idea if it was the truth or not. I just didn't react because I knew if I did, it wouldn't change the outcome. Wow, incredible levels of wisdom from this person. And I learned that staying calm in situations like that gave me the power. Ooh, almost like a little bit, what's the word for it? Almost a little scary, like cold. You know? Like, cold, almost cold-blooded. Like, I will stay calm. I will keep my emotions under control. Why? Because this gives me the power. Our marriage, too, had very few fights. Nice. If you didn't take out the trash like you said you would, I did it. How reasonable. How wonderfully reasonable. If you didn't take out the trash. More American English here. In the UK, we say rubbish, not trash. Okay? Right. Taking out the trash seems to be something that causes a lot of problems in marriages. I don't know why this is. It's a flashpoint in many marriages, taking out the trash, taking out the rubbish. Not in this marriage. If you didn't take out the rubbish or the trash like you said you would, I did it. Everything's fine. And when you noticed I'd done your chores, you felt so bad that you'd do some of mine to make it up. Oh. When you noticed I'd done your chores, this is basically housework. Again, chores in American English. They definitely use it a lot in American English. But do we say chores in British English? Chores, not so much. We tend to say housework. We do have the word in British English, but we don't use it nearly as much as they do in American English. We tend to use housework. But chores is a nice word, stuff you've got to do around the house. When you noticed I'd done your chores, you felt so bad that you'd do some of mine to make it up. If you make it up to someone, it means you do something to kind of compensate them or to repair something. Like in this case, she did something for him. And so he feels like he should do something in return to compensate her for what she did, to make it up for him. To make it up to him. Let me make it up to you. So it'd be like, oh, thanks for doing me that favour the other day. I really appreciate it. Look, let me make it up to you and I'll take you out for lunch. Something like that. You know, if someone does something for you, then you need to make it up to them by doing something for them in return. So you felt so bad that you'd do some of mine to make it up. Oh, what a perfect marriage. When our children misbehaved, right? Behaved badly. I never raised my voice, like shouted or screamed or made a scene. If you raise your voice, you know, don't make me raise my voice with you. Just to when your voice gets louder. Don't raise your voice to me. Or screamed. Okay, shout is just say things very loudly. Hello! Shout. Scream, it's got two meanings, I think. One meaning is just a noise. Ah! Like if you're in a horror film, someone's coming after you with a screwdriver, ah, scream. But also you can scream like shout, like help. That also means scream for help. So scream can either mean ah, or it can mean shouting. Especially if you're shouting at very high pitch. Okay. When our children misbehave, I never raised my voice or screamed or made a scene. I just asked them what they did. What did you do? And eventually they'd cave. So to cave or to cave in means to crumble. Like there's a picture of a cave here, but imagine the cave crumbling, the roof of the cave giving way and it collapsing. So to cave in means to kind of collapse. So if a child is like, you know, you're having a fight with a child and you say, what did you do? And the child just goes, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't, you know, I told a lie, or something like that. It's a cave. It's a kind of collapse. When their position... when their position kind of collapses, in the sense that they just admit that they're wrong, or they stop arguing, they lose the argument. Our oldest child, told me once it would be much less scary if I'd just shout at them like Dad did. So apparently her kind of cold-blooded approach was quite chilling, quite frightening. Like, what did you do? I don't, you know, I will find you, I will hunt you down. Like a sort of, you know, if Liam Neeson was in your family. I know if you've lied. I've got a particular set of skills. I figured I'd stay like I was. Okay, so she didn't change. Calm, quiet, a peacemaker, non-reactive. For the rest of my life. But you changed that. Emotional. You jerk. She's angry. When you died. Emotional. When you died, it was like that frozen mountain of emotional outbursts inside me melted all at once. So her emotional reserve was like a frozen mountain. And when he died, it melted and all the emotions came out. Nobody expected it when I started screaming and sobbing at the funeral. Sobbing means crying. Like that. My older brother tried to take me outside. Come on, come on, come outside, come outside. You're making a scene. And I punched him in the jaw. Drama. The jaw. This is your jaw. Well, it's not your jaw, that's my jaw. But you know what I mean. The jaw is the lower part of your mouth, the part that goes up and down. Right, your jaw. I punched him in the jaw. I apologise later, of course. I should hope so. You'd hardly recognise me now, I think. Meaning you wouldn't... If you saw me now, you wouldn't think I was the same person. Like, is that you? You'd hardly recognise me. You almost wouldn't be able to identify me. It's a lot harder for me to stare blankly now and take things. To stare blankly. Like that. If someone says, you know, excuse me, you took my parking space. Stare blankly and not argue. It's harder for me to stare blankly, meaning it's harder for her to keep her emotions in and just take things. The emotions come out. Because I keep remembering you saying, stand up for yourself. You deserve better, mi amor. Right. And you're not here anymore to stand up for me. To stand up for someone is to defend someone, to support someone. So if someone is being attacked, you would say, oi, excuse me, what are you doing? Don't leave her alone. I'm standing up for her. Or our kids. I don't know how to describe it exactly. What changed the moment you left this earth? But it's like I was blue one moment and red the next. Hard as ice before I melted into a hurricane. Can you melt into a hurricane? Don't know. Melt, you know, is when ice becomes water. Can you melt into a hurricane? I suppose so. I was a mess for a year or two, I think. A mess, like disorganized, no order, everything was all over the place. Emotionally disorganized, out of control. Before I managed to get everything under control again. Even now, I'm not like I was, meaning I'm different. I'm still calm and rational, and I think before I speak. But if anything or anyone threatens our children or their happiness, I know I have to be the one to protect them with my particular set of skills. And as anyone who's gone mountain climbing knows, the serene, snow-covered peaks that look so tranquil from a distance. Serene means quiet and peaceful. Snow-covered, covered in snow. Peaks, the tops of the mountains. The serene, snow-covered peaks that look so tranquil. Tranquil and serene. Tranquil means quiet. Right, here we go. tranquil, calm and peaceful, right? Tranquility and serene, calm and quiet. They're synonyms. There you go. Serene, tranquil. Where were we? These serene snow-covered peaks that look so tranquil from a distance are the deadliest. There's a slightly menacing undertone to this. Don't mess with this woman, basically. She will find you. She will hunt you down. And she will kill you. Okay, so that is where the video ends. That's where the audio from the video recording I did finishes. But I'm now adding a bit more here to the audio version in order to do a quick language summary of the bits of vocabulary that came up in that. So how was that for you? Did you enjoy the story? As I said, there weren't many narrative elements. It was more an emotional story, but, you know, quite an interesting one. Again, I do recommend that you try reading the story out loud yourself, either by repeating after me or not, just, you know, reading it out loud with the story in front of you. But now let me recap some of the vocabulary items and British and American English differences that you heard there, just to sum up and help you remember what you've just heard. I'll be as brief as I can while basically just jogging your memory here. So I'm going to fly through this list. You can find this vocabulary list on the page for this episode on my website, of course. It's actually quite a long list. There was a lot of language in there. Obviously, a lot of words, but I mean a lot of target language, lots of stuff that you could focus on learning. Let's see how much of this stuff you already know. Let's see how many things you remember, how many of these things you can actually take on and start using yourself. So we've got, first thing, I hardly cried. I hardly cried. And it's worth pointing this one out again. I hardly cried means I didn't cry very much. I cried a tiny amount. And the good example for this would be the difference between to work hard and to hardly work. Okay, to work hard means you put a lot of effort in, right? Make a lot of effort, solid work. To work hard, right? And then to hardly work means to do almost no work. All right. Next one is to fuss or to make a fuss. So fuss is a verb and it's a noun. To fuss. Oh, stop fussing and don't make a fuss. So fuss is quite a difficult one to define somehow, but basically it means kind of anxious, nervous behaviour or excited behaviour, which serves no particularly useful purpose. It's kind of useless, upset, anxious behavior. And people typically say things like, oh, what's all the fuss about? I don't know what all the fuss is about. Everyone's talking about this Meghan and Harry interview, but what's all the fuss about? So the fuss would be like, in this case, people arguing, people getting upset about it, right? What's all the fuss about? Another example would be like you're in a restaurant or a hotel or something and there's a problem and, you know, like my wife says to me, why don't you complain about it? And I say, well, I don't want to make a fuss, meaning I don't want people to be upset. I don't want there to be problems. Okay, to make a fuss. Similarly, we have the expression to make a scene, which would be if you make a scene, it means you do something which attracts lots of attention, like, for example, angrily shouting at staff in an airport terminal or in a hotel lobby. You know, you've seen that in hotels where someone's checking out of the hotel and they're very angry because of some problem and they're shouting and people are getting upset and everyone looks over. Ooh, what's going on over here? One of the customers is making a scene. Okay. Similarly, my daughter, if she gets upset or something and she starts having a tantrum, you know, that's kind of like making a scene, making a fuss. Okay, moving on swiftly. Siblings. You remember what siblings are? Siblings are brothers and sisters. Okay. Next is the verb to bet. Now, we know that to bet means to put money on something. Tibet. Yeah, not the place, Tibet. Not the place. There is a joke for that, which is, what is it? There was a comedian called Dennis Penis, and he was famous for asking movie stars stupid questions. He was around before Ali G did it. He did it first, really. And he went up to, what's his name? Oh, God, why can't I remember his name? Hamster actor. Come on. Richard Gere. Okay. He went up to Richard Gere, who's famously a Buddhist, and he said, Richard Gere, I've heard that you are a Buddhist. And he goes, yeah, that's right. And Richard Gere is very serious. He takes himself very seriously. And he said, do you like Tibet or do you think gambling's wrong? And Richard Gere just kind of looked at him like, what? He didn't realize that there was a joke being made. Do you like Tibet? Do you like Tibet? Or do you think gambling is wrong? Okay, so to bet, B-E-T. To put money on something because you think it's going to happen. You're going to win money if you do, if it happens, right? So you bet on a horse or something like that in a horse race. But also we use bet all the time in everyday English to mean I think it's going to happen. I expect it will happen. I'm sure it will happen. For example, I bet that England get knocked out of the World Cup on penalties, or I bet it rains this afternoon. Like we're planning to do yoga in the park, but I bet it rains this afternoon and we have to cancel. Okay. Next was to shrug your shoulders. So if you don't know, if you sort of as if you want to kind of say, well, I don't know, right? Like, oh, I don't know. How do you express that with your body language? Well, your shoulders kind of go up, don't they? Huh? I don't know. So that is to shrug your shoulders, S-H-R-U-G. Again, you can see all these words on the page for this episode, so I don't need to kind of spell them all. Next one is to grit your teeth. Grit. Now, there's like a literal meaning of this and then the idiomatic meaning. So literally, gritting your teeth means to clench your jaw. Clench your jaw. So your teeth are held tightly together. So clench your jaw. Grit your teeth. But in terms of the idiom, it means to decide to do something even though you don't want to do it. So like, come on, let's do it. Like I had to tell my dad that I'd crashed his car. So I just gritted my teeth and told him. Dad, I've crashed your car. I didn't actually say it like that. Dad, I've crashed your car. What? I can't understand you. I'm sorry, but I've crashed your car. You know, not literally. I just kind of like, right, come on, let's do it. Got to tell him. Let's tell him. So I just gritted my teeth and got on with it. Not literally. Next is a cast or a plaster cast. If you break your arm, then you go to a hospital and they will put a cast on your arm to keep your arm in one position so that the bone can repair itself. A plaster cast or a cast. Next is to be able to afford something. You probably know this one, right? We can't afford it. We couldn't afford it. We use be able to after, you know, in grammatical situations when you can't use can. So that would be after modal verbs, you know, most commonly. So we'd use be able to. For example, we won't be able to afford it. You know, obviously we can't say we won't can be able to afford it. That's clearly bad grammar. So no one ever does that. Instead, it's we won't be able to afford it. Right. Next one is a cripple. This is an offensive word, really, and not a nice word to describe someone who has a physical disability of some kind, maybe because of a birth defect or because of illness or because of an accident. We don't really use the word cripple these days. It's an insulting word. You might say, you know, a disabled person. And we don't really use the word handicapped either anymore. So the appropriate word is disabled, a disabled person. Next, to get picked on, to get teased, to get bullied. Now, these are all things that might happen to kids at school. So to get bullied is the most serious one. Bullying is considered to be quite serious. And there are some cases where bullying is really, really serious and very, very bad. So I remember kids getting bullied at my school. One particular kid at my school got bullied so badly that his parents removed him from the school and put him in a new school because he was so miserable. So bullying is a form of abuse, you know, and it can be like physical abuse, like when older kids like hit younger kids or beat them up or something. Or it could just be like hassling them, harassing them, taking money or food or possessions from them. This is bullying. To get picked on is a similar thing, but slightly less serious. So, you know, most kids at school get picked on for something. Like you get picked on because of your appearance. You get picked on if you've got a funny name Right. To be teased is also the same thing. To tease someone is like to make fun of someone. Okay. So let's say you've got a funny name and people are going to, let's say if your name is Richard, the short name, a short version of Richard could be Dick. So people might call you Dick, you know, they'd call you Dick as a joke. They tease you, make fun of you, pick on you. Right. Okay. Next, we've got to get catcalled. Getting catcalled is something that happens to women in public when men shout out rude things and suggestive things or directly sexual things to women that they see in the street. And typically it would be like men working on a building site next to the road and a woman walks down the road and the men are shouting, "All right, darling, show us your legs." You know, that sort of thing, to get catcalled. Okay. To flash a smile is to suddenly show a fantastic smile. You know, to flash a smile, you know, to smile at someone in a dazzling and charming kind of way. And also you can say a blinding smile. This is when the smile is so bright and brilliant that it's blinding. Ah, oh, what a charming, amazing smile. He flashed a blinding smile. The next one is, oh, I'll take that as a yes then. I'll take that as a yes then. This is what we say when you've asked someone a question and they haven't said yes specifically, but essentially their response, or you take their response as a yes. Okay, so it'd be like, you know, do you want to go to the cinema? Well, I'll take that as a yes then. Okay, I'm going through these quickly. This is not how I do things in the premium subscription. I take a lot more time and go into loads more examples and all the collocations and synonyms and things you need and all the pronunciation drills and all that stuff. But here, this is just a quick vocab recap. Next one is to get upset. And remember, you can get upset because you're sad. Like, for example, I don't know, if your dog has died, you might get upset. Oh, Fluffy died. Yeah. Right. And also you might get upset if you're very angry. Like if, I don't know, what, someone just scratched your car, you might get upset about that. Okay, next is to get fired. This is when you lose your job and the boss tells you that you've got to go because you did something wrong. Right, I got fired. Okay, to skip lunch. This is when you choose not to have lunch, maybe because you're on a diet or you're trying to save money or you don't have time. So I was working really hard on this episode of the podcast and I was really in the zone. So I just skipped lunch and carried on working. A scholarship. This is when someone pays for you to do something. Okay. When someone pays for you to do something, usually to do some studying. Okay. So if you get a scholarship to a school or university, it means your studies are paid for by the school or university or by some other organization. And it's quite common in the American university system. To be stunned. If you're stunned, it means you can't move. If you're very surprised or shocked, you might be stunned. I can't believe it. To soften your voice is suddenly to start speaking kind of like this. Sometimes when my daughter's making a fuss, if she's refusing to do something, I will catch myself getting angry. Oh, come on! And then I realise, no, don't get angry. And then soften my voice. Come on, darling. You know, if you don't do it, you won't get any sweeties. There's always some negotiation involved. Anyway, to soften your voice. To talk back. This is when, usually this is something that children do and parents don't like it. Okay, so if a child talks back, it means they respond in a rude way. Okay, so if you're telling your child off for doing something wrong and the child talks back, it's considered to be rude and bad behavior for children to respond like that. Next one is to sneak. So to sneak into the kitchen, to sneak around, to sneak somewhere is to kind of go there silently so no one can hear you. Like a ninja sneaking into the kitchen, sneaking into the fridge in the middle of the night. And also you can sneak something into something, like to sneak money into someone's wallet. You can sneak money out of someone's wallet as well, I suppose. I think this is probably a lot more common. I mean, another example, let's say my daughter, one of her teeth has come out. You know, if you know, when children, as they get older, they lose their teeth, their baby teeth fall out. And the tradition is that the child leaves the tooth under their pillow. And you tell them that the tooth fairy in the middle of the night will come in, take the tooth away and replace it with a coin. But of course, what happens is the parent, I mean, I hope this is not a shock to anyone listening. Yes, that's right. The tooth fairy doesn't exist, and neither does Father Christmas doesn't exist either. Yeah. Sorry to break it to you. Instead, what happens is the parent sneaks into the child's bedroom and sneaks the coin under the child's pillow. Okay. Fight. What's the past form of fight? It's, of course, fought and fought. So fight, fought, fought. And buy, bought, bought as well. To cheat on someone means to have an affair with someone. So if you are married to someone and you cheat on them, it means that you go with someone else. You know, you have a relationship or you have sex with someone else behind their back. So to be unfaithful. To be unfaithful, to cheat on someone, to have an affair. Okay. Next one is to freak someone out. To freak someone out is to shock, surprise, or disturb someone. Okay. Examples. Freak out. Freak someone out. If someone freaks out or something freaks them out, they suddenly feel extremely surprised, upset, angry, or confused. Let's have some examples. I remember the first time I went on stage, I freaked out completely. I think our music freaks people out sometimes. It sort of frightens me. I guess I'm kind of freaked out by it. Okay, there you go, to be freaked out by something. A very common one, which I'm sure you've heard, at least you've heard me use that before, I'm sure. Next one is to make it up to someone. So if you do something wrong and you make someone feel upset or someone's angry with you and you need to apologize, you might make it up to them by doing something for them. Let me make it up to you by buying you dinner. Let me make it up to you somehow. Okay, like, I'm really sorry about the blah, blah, blah. Let me make it up to you. Okay. All right. Next one is to raise your voice. This just means to shout, you know, to raise your voice. Stop doing that. You know, to raise your voice, to shout. Yeah, I've done that one. To scream, as we know, scream could be just making a noise like, ah, like in a horror film. Or scream could also just be to shout as well. You know, come here, like that. He screamed. To cave or to cave in. To cave in. Literally, this is when something collapses, like a structure, like a roof or a ceiling caves in, it collapses inwards. But also, if you cave in, it means you suddenly stop arguing, you stop resisting. When people put pressure on you, you essentially kind of give up and stop arguing, okay, to cave in, especially cave in to pressure. Okay, next we have emotional outbursts. An outburst is when something bursts out. Right, you've seen the film Alien, right? There's obviously that famous scene where the alien bursts out of someone's chest, right? You know, the alien face hugger attaches itself to the face of one of the characters and implants an alien embryo in his stomach, and then the face hugger, after a few days, falls off. The guy thinks he's all right, and then suddenly the alien bursts out of his chest. Oh, what a classic scene. Horrific. And all the actors are freaking out because apparently the director, Ridley Scott, used some samples of real animal blood in the scene, and there was a lot more blood than some of the actors expected. So they're screaming and freaking out, and their reactions are quite realistic. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is it outbursts. So an alien can burst out, but also emotions can burst out as well. So emotional outbursts could be moments when you get suddenly very angry or very upset or something like that. It's a sign of grief. It could be a sign of trauma, sudden emotional outbursts. Next one is to melt. Now, butter will melt if you leave it out on a hot day. Ice cream melts. But also you can melt as well, where you're previously cold, emotionless position starts to turn into something a lot more warm and emotional, to melt emotionally, to suddenly become softer and more emotional. To punch someone in the jaw, this is American English, really. In British English, we would say to punch someone in the face, but your jaw is the lower part, that moves up and down when you eat. Your jaw. Okay, the jaw there. To stare, we know, is to kind of look without blinking, just look in an intense way, staring at something. I couldn't believe it when the alien burst out of his chest. I just couldn't stop staring. To stare blankly. Blank means without any kind of expression on your face, just a blank expression, just no expression on your face. That's blank. So to stare blankly would be to just stare at something or someone with no expression on your face. To stand up for yourself would be to defend yourself. So if someone is picking on you, you might stand up for yourself like, oh, leave me alone, you know, something like that. We've had to melt already. A mess is the opposite of something that's tidy. So, for example, when I was a teenager, my bedroom was always a mess. There were clothes on the floor. There were things lying around. The bed was all over the place, a complete mess. And my mum and dad would say, your bedroom is an absolute mess. Can you tidy it up, please? But you can also be a mess yourself, an emotional mess. This is when you're very upset all the time. Like, you know, after my dog died, I was a complete mess for weeks. Just crying all the time and hugging a pillow, rocking back and forward. A total mess. Serene and tranquil. Serene and tranquil. So serene basically means peaceful, calm and quiet, like a Japanese garden. Okay, like some sort of Zen garden, very serene and tranquil. Also, is a synonym of this. It means peaceful, calm, and quiet. Okay, serene and tranquil. And then we've got deadly. Something that's deadly can kill you. Okay, like a deadly virus, a deadly, deadly poison, a deadly snake, and deadly, deadlier, and the deadliest. Okay, let me go through the American English and British English. So in America, in school, they talk about grades like fifth grade, sixth grade and stuff. In the UK, we tend to use year, first year, second year, third year. In America, they talk about your pants. But in the UK, these are trousers. It's a very well-known difference there. In American English, they use the word mad, whereas in the UK we would use the word angry, although mad also means mentally unstable as well, crazy. It also means crazy in both versions of the language, but Americans will say, you're making me mad, whereas in the UK we would say, you're making me angry. In America they would say to figure something out, and in the UK we would say to work something out, just trying to figure out what's going on. And in the UK, I'm just trying to work out what's going on. In the USA, they tend to say to yell, you know, to yell at someone, whereas in the UK, it's to shout, like to shout at someone. In the USA, they might describe someone as a jerk, you stupid jerk, whereas in the UK, it would probably be an idiot, you stupid idiot. In America, they take out the trash, but in the UK, we take the rubbish out. So the trash in America and the rubbish in the UK. In the US, they tend to use chores, or they use the word chores more than we do in the UK. In the UK, we probably use housework, but it's possible to use chores as well, just not as often as they do in America. And as I said before, in America, it's punch someone in the jaw, whereas in the UK, it would be punch someone in the face. So we don't just focus on the jaw. It's like any part of the face will do. Just punch someone in the face. Not that that happens all the time. But anyway, it's funny that we... Maybe in America, they've got such big jaws. They're all teeth and jaws, aren't they, in America? They're all necks and teeth and jaws, Americans. Maybe that's why they punch each other in the jaw a lot more easily, because their jaws are just like so much bigger. Whereas in the UK, it just doesn't matter. Just punch someone in the face. Doesn't really matter where. Okay, right. So that is that. That was my vocab recap for this episode. I really hope you enjoyed this. I hope you enjoyed this story. And as I said at the beginning, I'm going to be doing more stories, various stories from different sources. So I hope you enjoy those too. But that is the end of this episode. Thank you so much for listening. As ever, you can leave your comments in the comments section. But from me to you now, I will just end this episode by saying goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.